Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, and welcome to episode 18 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about women and codependence, and boy, do we have a fabulous expert, Christina Wanzelak. But before we start, I want you to know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix, customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate this podcast and review us while you're at it. We really welcome your thoughts. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about Her.
And on this episode, wow, what a hot topic. Women and codependence. Our expert is Christina Wanzelak, and a lot of you have seen her on television already. She's a leader in the addictions industry, a certified addiction specialist, and she's been at it since 1995. She's highly respected and renowned for her compassionate and effective work, and is credited with helping thousands of addicts and their families work through what happens in that family dynamic. She does this as an international interventionist, author, and television expert. Yeah, you heard what I said, television expert. She's the co-author of the acclaimed memoir, The Lost Years, Surviving a Mother and Daughter's Worst Nightmare. She co-wrote this with her mother. The Lost Years is a triumphant and inspirational story of addiction, hope, and the deep love between a mother and daughter. And quite frankly, she's the expert on Lifetime's docuseries, Intervention, Codependent. Oh, good grief, she's been on television. She is an expert on Good Morning America. Yeah, she's the one, and she is going to be our go-to person today on the whole issue of women and codependence. Christina, welcome to the Her podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Such a pleasure to be here, and certainly a great gift to meet you today.
Oh, good grief. Well, it's the feeling is mutual, Christina. What can I say? First, tell us a little bit about you, you know, in a nutshell, why you got involved in all of this. You have such a rich history.
Thank you. Sure. So I became interested in working in the field of addiction through my own recovery. So I became addicted personally myself when I was 13. I had my first drink and then addicted to methamphetamine and crack cocaine at the age of 15 and eventually ended up homeless in the streets of San Francisco. So having a very deep understanding, a very deep and personal understanding of what it feels like to be addicted and how drugs and alcohol became the most important thing in my life above and beyond anything and everyone else. I did go to treatment at the age of 21, and I have been clean and sober since, which I just celebrated 23 years clean and sober.
Oh, my gosh. Can I just give you, yay, you hear my little applause there? Oh, my gosh.
It's been an extraordinary way to spend a life, I will certainly say. And so when I got sober, I became very interested in the disease of addiction, how it happened to me, how it happened to my family. Became very interested in the process of codependency, family illness, recovery, treatment. So there I began my studying. Eventually found my way into intervention, which is what I do by trade. And I've been practicing intervention now for over 20 years. And it has taken me on the most amazing journey across the country, really across the world, meeting. I have met the most incredible families, and I have learned, you know, I say all the time that every family I have had the pleasure to work with has taught me something about myself. It's made me a better parent, a better mother, a better professional, a more insightful woman, more loving woman. So I consider it not just a service that I provide, but it has really changed my life. And I say, you know, I say often that, you know, what I do for a living, it certainly is a calling. I was called to do this work. But ultimately, intervention, I get a front row seat. I get a front row seat to watching people redeem themselves. And that's the great, journey of my life. And so in addiction and intervention, of course, having to study codependency, you know, behind every great addict, there's an equally great codependent. And looking at the whole family system, I realized very early on that you cannot treat addiction without treating the family system, at least not effectively.
Well, let's step back for a second then. First of all, I want to make sure that everyone knows that what this also led to in 1998 was your founding Full Circle Intervention, which is a private intervention practice that's grown into an internationally respected intervention practice. And this is amazing. And then you went on to open Full Circle Recovery Center, where you offer intensive outpatient treatment, long-term recovery care, and a premier sober living community. Rock on. So
Thank you.
Step back for a second. What is codependence? I bet a lot of women out there in her podcast land are sitting back saying, oh gosh, am I a codependent? I mean, what does that mean?
I think that's such a great question, especially with women. And it can get so confusing and the lines can become very blurred between being a loving person and a caretaking person, being a good parent, and then sliding into codependency. It's very tricky. I think in essence, though, I think the most simple way I can describe it is ultimately codependency is a loss of self. It's a process of losing ourselves in relationships, in intimate relationships, in marriages, in friendships, and even as mothers. I think it's very easy to lose ourselves by giving more, right? Women give more and more of themselves and expect less and less back.
Why do women, are women more inclined, based upon all of your work, to be the codependent person?
Yes, I see that in the majority. Certainly men can be codependent as well, of course. But I think women by nature, because we are the caretakers in family systems, we're the caretakers even in businesses and companies. You know, we lead with emotion and thought and feeling as opposed to logic and fact. And so it's a different way of approaching the world. We are very emotional. You know, women are very emotional. And we want to caretake and love. And it's important for us to feel, I think it's really important for women to feel needed. And furthermore, we are needed, right? Women are a very powerful, well, let's be honest, right? In many ways, we are the more powerful of the sexes in the sense that we continue life, we create life, we give life. So we have a very important role in our society. And I think that we're looked to. I think women are looked to. For love and care. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. So, you know, when a woman is sitting here saying, you know, I wonder if I'm codependent, what questions should she ask herself to kind
Another
of,
great
you know,
question.
Identify
sure.
that?
Sure. So some of the great symptoms of codependency would be low self-esteem or feeling that you're not good enough and always comparing yourself to others. People-pleasing is a huge symptom of codependence. You know, letting yourself go to make room for somebody else, right? Letting your own needs take the back burner to make room for somebody else's wants or needs. Generally, codependency has a symptom of poor boundaries. So instead of having a structure around us, it's more, you know, our boundaries get soft and we kind of twist and turn like a pretzel, if that makes sense, through the lives of the people that we love most, really wanting to please and take care of people because that gives women value. That's the thing about codependency. The secret payoff to codependent behavior is not taking care of others necessarily because they might need that, but taking care of others because it makes the person feel better. So, for example, a very simple example of that in addiction is when I have a mother whose child is in jail and the mother wants to go bail their child out, even though the best thing that might be for that child is to be in jail, it's unbearable for the codependent. It's unbearable for the mother. So she goes and gets her child. Does that make sense? So it's really interrupting what very well may be. So I say, you know, who is it that you think you are to rob your person of their life lesson? And so really having those poor boundaries and kind of slipping and sliding all over the place. Of course, caretaking is a huge symptom of codependency, dysfunctional communication, trying to control others. So, and to be honest with you, what I see in women, so for addiction, you know, addicts, you know, are overcome with feelings that we cannot bear. And so we reach outside ourselves for the substance, yes, to handle the feelings that we can't bear. What I see in women that are codependent, they're overcome with anxiety, and they don't know how to treat that anxiety, or they're overcome with feelings of low self-esteem, self-hatred, and ultimately, I think the huge psychological driver is shame, that women don't feel good enough. So when they're flooded with those feelings, the codependent will reach outside themselves to try and control the situation that they see is causing them the anxiety, when ultimately codependent healing is taking care of your learning how to heal the inside, as opposed to finding something on the outside to fix it.
I bet a lot of women out there are wondering, where does codependence start? What's it rooted in?
So generally, the birthplace of codependency generally is in childhood. So like I said, what I know is that the psychological driver to all addictive behavior, including codependency, is shame. And shame is accumulated over a lifetime, yes? So generally, it begins in childhood, coming from a family. And I want to be really clear, you know, codependency, addiction, all of it. Oftentimes, that, you know, I say to my addicted clients all the time that addiction happens to really good people and really decent families all the time. So it's not about making the family wrong. Families generally do the very best they can with what they have. But if a child is raised in a family where that child has to take care of the parents, or that child's needs is not taken care of, yes, for many different reasons, say you have an addicted parent, or say you have parents or a single mother who's working two jobs to support the child at home, but the child is left to, in some ways, raise themselves, that's where codependency would be born. So it can come from families where the child is not, the child's needs, either emotionally or physically or both, are not taken care of. And also what I have found, to be honest with you, it's so hard to just like find a place to put the responsibility. Because codependency, codependent behaviors, there are cross-generational transference of behavior. So this is a learned process generally over years and generations, generational effect of codependency. And children pick that up, especially, you know, and women pick that up. And so they're raised to take care of others, and oftentimes with the lack of themselves.
And well, actually, there's also another layer to that as well. And that other layer is quite amazing. And it's called the new science of epigenetics. And in that science, what it really shows is that, you know, it's not just as a child is growing up and experiencing things environmentally, but they actually inherit what happened to a grandparent or a great-grandparent. All of those fears, fight and flight, out of control, etc., are passed on generation to generation. And epigeneticists, who are people who study what happens to changes in gene expression over time, have found that this really relates to behavioral adaptations and how we actually behave ourselves in present day. So it's both environmental as well as what was passed down. And that's why what you said has been so backed and affirmed by hardcore, credible, and cutting-edge science now. Isn't that amazing, Christina?
It is, and I've seen that. So part of my intervention work is also looking at like a family tree. So I actually do a family tree, if you will, with every family that I sit with. So looking at, and one of the questions I ask is, have there been any traumatic events in the generations prior? Yes, because to your point, traumatic events changes brain chemistry. And so therefore, those brain chemical changes, like on a very deep cellular level, are passed on to the next generation. There's a saying in the Bible, not that I quote the Bible often, but, you know, that the sins of the father are visited upon the fourth and fifth generation. And so now we're seeing through scientific study exactly what you just said. And what we've been seeing, but have been unable to explain, now science shows.
Isn't that the most amazing thing? And, you know, we're really understanding now that when you're born, you don't just stand up and say, I'm a singular entity and I have nothing to do with generations prior. Clearly, we know about strong genes. You and I both know, and probably a lot of listeners out there in her podcast land, that there's a strong genetic, tendency in addiction itself, especially, you know, alcoholism, et cetera. We understand that. But there's more to it than that. Because, you know, what's interesting, too, is that you can have five children raised in similar circumstances. Only one becomes an addict. What happened? And that's why you have to look at the complexity of their parentage, their grandparentage, their great-grandparentage, their environment, their own gene expression. There's so much going on here. Some people are just built to be more stress resilient, the ability to be able to adapt and adjust when life hits one way or the other without defaulting to self-destruction. Others, well, you and I both know that the Achilles heel of addiction is a lack of stress resilience, that there's something wrong with the ability to adapt and adjust in addition to whatever genetic overlay too. So, wow, is this complex. Don't you just sometimes, Christina, sit back and go, phew, this is a lot, you know?
Absolutely. You know, as I travel across the country with my mom, you know, my mom and I wrote The Lost Years together. I have to say, you know, she is the hero of my story for sure. But people often ask us, you know, what was it that happened to you, Christina, right? What was it that happened to you to make you this way? And to your point, it's such a complicated, kind of mysterious recipe of addiction because I'm one of four and my other siblings are not addicted. So why was it me? You know, we were all raised under the same roof and, you know, I was loved all the days of my life and wanted and what was it about me? So to your point, it's just I say all the time, it's, you know, it's just a recipe of all different things, genetics and environment and, you know, temperament, psychological temperament, and you know, all sorts of different things that fold into the mix to make addiction or to make any obsessive compulsive behavior, if that makes sense. So I don't know. And sometimes I feel like maybe I was just the lucky one. Because on the flip side of all that is also incredibly sensitive, you know, addicts, codependents alike, especially, you know, in the women that I work with, we are some of the most insightful, insensitive, compassionate human beings I have ever met. And I consider it such a privilege to spend my life working with women, codependents, you know, addicts. It's been a great privilege of mine. I couldn't think of a better population, a more inspiring population to work with, because although we get lost, we also get found in very extraordinary and beautiful ways.
Well, I love what you just said, Christina. I mean, good grief, you're so articulate about this, and you could really tell that you come from a deep place of being of service and compassion. You know, I have to tell you, there's another layer of science here that is quite fascinating, and it's come over, I guess it's emerged over the last, half dozen years or so, and that is that people who have addictive tendencies, however they manifest themselves, tend to also be exquisitely sensitive to life. So whereas someone else may be walking in and they may see, a bird struggling, on the ground because maybe it broke its wing, someone else may just simply look at that and say, wow, a bird struggling with a broken wing. But a sensitive person, it just breaks your heart. And you go so deep and you feel and you empath. And this is why some of the greatest, most creative people on the planet have addictive tendencies. The famous pictures of the great writers, smoking and drinking at the same time, and it goes on and on. It's almost as though you need something, to numb yourself of some of the pain of the exquisite empathy and the absorbing of your environment. You just go deeper. So you're absolutely correct. There is a tremendously deep sensitivity. It goes very, very deep. And I think that you're seeing that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that you say that for a few reasons. But the first is I can't tell you how many parents, mothers I've had in my office over the years that will say to me this very thing, verbatim, out of all of my children, the addicted one is the most sensitive. You know, when I was raising all 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 of my kids or 2 of my kids, what I always found was the addicted one was the most sensitive. And there's actually a theory or a belief in the Native American culture that addicts, that our veil, the veil that protects us from the feelings and the happenings on the planet is much thinner than the average person, which I love that, the way the Native Americans explain it, that we walk around with a very thin veil, and it's hard for us to protect ourselves from the world at large, and that we feel things far greater than the non-addicted. And so alcohol, it creates that protection. Alcohol and drugs, it creates that protection. Or with codependency, when I'm saving others, when I'm trying to protect others, when I'm taking care of others, it gives me purpose or meaning, or it helps me protect, it protects me from all the intense emotion that I feel around you. So it's almost as if the Native Americans say that addicts are in many ways without skin. You know, we walk around without skin, exposed completely, nerve and blood and sinew, to everything that happens on the planet. And I love that description because I see it in my work, but also I experienced it. That's how I lived my life. It was just so painful. Living life was a painful experience. And when I was high, I felt protected or at ease. When the first time I drank, I felt like it was the first time I ever exhaled. And it was perfection.
Wow.
It was perfection. And I chased that, I chased that into the grave, almost into the grave. And I see, I think one of the great tragedies, if you don't mind my saying, I think about this a lot with codependency in women. And what I see is one of the great tragedies, is that women, codependency, right? Women trying to control or contain the addiction or the person or the situation can lead to years. It's like chasing ghosts. It is an impossible war. And it results in many lost and unhappy years. And so much of my intervention work is helping, the women, the codependents, to really turn that light around, take it off the person or the situation and ask themselves the more difficult question, which is, what is it about me? What is it that I'm feeling about myself? What is it that I'm lacking that allows me to completely give of myself and bleed out all over the place and not know where I am going or who I am or how I feel? I work with women that can't name a feeling. They don't know how they feel because they feel it all. They don't know how to work through it or talk talk about it or heal it.
Well, it's overwhelming.
That's right.
It's very overwhelming. It's like, man, you're getting it from every single angle. It's like somebody's in pain over there. You've got to go to them. They need you. You're absorbing other people's angst and anxiety and fears. And it just goes on and on. And after a while, no wonder you want to numb, because all of the stuff that you describe, substances like this, are just anesthetics, you know, at the end of the day. You know, when you talk about how to be able to help yourself through this, right? You offer tips. And, you know, and as you say, you said the your tips help you to appreciate everything that has brought you to this point in time, show you how to get beyond your fears, and help you to get the return on the passion and effort you put into life that you deserve. One of the things that you note in your tips is bringing emotionally healthy people into your life who want to know what you think, feel, and need. Wow, emotionally healthy. You know what I've always called that, Christina, when I've worked with addictive people? It's like, honey, sit down and change your tribe. It's looking ugly. All right?
I mean,
we got to change the tribe. We got to pitch, you know, Mary. We got to ditch, you know, Larry. And we got to clean this thing up. And that really means you got to tell your true truth. You got to understand what works for you and what doesn't work for you, and stop wanting to please people. Oh, boy. So getting those emotionally healthy people, you know, surrounding you, what would you share with our wonderful listeners on the Herb podcast about how to begin that process?
I love that you say that, because in my work, in my intensive outpatient program, we talk about that all the time. You got to find a tribe to belong to, a new tribe that's going to bring health, happiness, and wellness into your life. I think when I work with women in codependency, first of all, finding that tribe, and I think one of the most simple ways is to find, and most accessible ways, is the 12-step process, whether that's Codependence Anonymous or Al-Anon. And I know that some people can find that difficult, but it is accessible and simple and free. And the other thing that's really important with codependent recovery is finding psychotherapy, really looking at the family of origin issues in a safe professional environment. I think that's very important. I think physical activity, to be frank with you, is also very important. It changes biochemistry. It changes how you feel about yourself. It's an empowering situation. You know, being physically fit is very empowering, and it's something that women can do. My mom would tell you, as simple as it is, that walking saved her life, that she would walk a half hour in one direction and talk about all her problems. And then she'd walk a half hour back and talk about all the solution and all the things that she was grateful for. When I was addicted and dying in the street, you know, she would tell you that walking saved her life. And I know it's simple, but it's incredibly empowering, and it gets you out of yourself. I think those are very simple, obviously very simple ways to help yourself. And I tell families all the time when I work, this is a very powerful statement, but so goes the mother. So goes the children. So when I work with codependent mothers, really encouraging them to heal themselves, to learn how to sit with the anxiety through the things that we just mentioned, and in your own recovery, right? As you get better, you inspire others to get better. Women lead, right? We are leaders, even though we don't know it. And women will lead people into recovery. Yes? So I say to mothers all the time, you heal yourself, you lead your family, they will follow, right? The addict isn't going to lead, right? The addict's not going to wake up and say, okay, I got it, I'm out, right? That rarely happens. But we follow, right? And women lead when they find recovery. We become
incredibly empowered. Oh my gosh, that's the perfect way to end this podcast. Women lead. It's really true.
It's
oh
so
my gosh.
True.
You know, and it's so true from every single angle, including science. And I love the fact that your mom walked, because as everyone knows from my background, as a fitness expert, in addition, I'm always espousing getting up, assuming the vertical and rocking it. Why? Because when you do that, you actually stimulate neurogenesis, which is the growth of more brain cells, new neural circuitry to supervene over the old stuff, new things, to be able to crystallize your thinking and also your total body healing. Rock on for your mom. Well, I want to make sure everyone knows that we have been talking about women and codependence with Christina Wanzelak. She is the author, co-author with her mom, of The Lost Years, Surviving a Mother and Daughter's Worst Nightmare. You could see her on television. Good grief. She's the addiction expert on Good Morning America and more, the expert on Lifetime's docuseries Intervention, Codependent. She's also the founder of Full Circle Intervention. Please find out more about her on her website, fullcircleintervention.com. Christina, thank you for being on the Her podcast. Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes. Why? Well, because we want to attract more people just like you to the show, and that happens when you take the time to rate it. While you're at it, please leave a review. It's so important. We want to hear from you. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. You could also check out Her on this Her Radio MD page. And look at all of our past episodes. Have a listen and enjoy. Thanks for listening, and stay well.